Wind Down with Jana Kramer, an iHeartRadio podcast.
I'm so nervous to always start because you always mess up with my starts. Should we have like a professional start, or should we just say, "Hey guys," like Jana likes to do?
I mean,
or maybe this is our thing. Maybe this is our start every time is an awkward start.
Hey guys, welcome to another episode of Wind Down with Jana and Mike.
I'm your host, Mike.
And we're New York Times bestsellers.
Oh my goodness.
What? Insane. You guys, we are floored. We don't even really have the words. When we found out the other day, Mike and I were just like, we went to dinner and we're like, wait, what? What? Like, I would have never imagined.
No, never.
Like, so just thank you guys for all your support, for just, you know, I wrote this on an Instagram post the other day. I said it was scary because I'm like, who are we? Like, we're not authors.
Now we are. And no one can say otherwise.
But do you know what I mean, though? I'm like, I'm afraid it's not going to be enough because we're not like a, you know, Glennon Doyle or Emily Giffen, the people that I look up to as authors. I'm like, what if people are like, they suck. And, you know, so I was so afraid that, I mean, I know you're an amazing writer and I always encouraged you, but it was just scary. I'm like, you know, who are we to like put out a book? And so I was scared of the rejection, but I feel like, you know, yes, it's amazing that we got the title of New York Times bestseller, but I feel like the win and the victory has been from all the DMs and comments that we've gotten.
Oh, yeah. I mean, even if we didn't get it, sure, we set out personal goals and we put our goals very high and we achieved it, which was awesome. But that's not what, you know, validates us. That's not what, you know, encourages us on why this is a good thing to do. It's like Jana said, it's all the DMs, it's all the messages and everything and support that we've gotten, you know, from this adventure. Now, the ticket is, so we're not one-hit wonders, just to back it up.
Back it up, back it up.
Back it up with part duh.
But we're excited because we want to celebrate with you guys tonight. Well, if you're listening to this on Monday, the event is October 5th, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern. Unwind with us. We've got Tyler Rich performing. We're going to have a live Q&A, a performance, couples panel. It's going to be really fun, so you guys can get your tickets available at tixr.com, T-I-X-R.com. It's all the laughs, the tears, and all the drama, well, that you've come to expect from this show.
And hear and read from The Good Fight.
But the tickets are $10, and we really hope that you guys join us because it's going to be a lot of fun. You can also get a signed book, too. If you didn't get a signed book, you can buy a signed book along with your ticket as well if you want. So we're excited. And just thank you again for just reaching out to us and for telling your friends. We hoped that this book touched y'all and helped mm-hmm. you and made you not feel alone and made you laugh and made you cry. And again, like we said, it's amazing to be called New York Times best-selling authors, but the win is that y'all
received it
and gave us a home to feel safe.
Yeah.
Now, and that you pass all it on to your fought friends, the good fight to us.
Pass it on to your friends.
And make your friends buy.
Yeah. I mean, no. No, but just for if you guys got something out of the book, you know, pass it on to others. So, absolutely. You know, we want people to a mass of people to be, you know, helped from this book if possible and can grow from our misery. That would be amazing.
All right. Well, we're going to take a break. And then Mike said
I have a topic.
Wants to talk about something. I have no idea what it is. So stay tuned. Okay, so we're going to get to Mike's topic, but we just want to tease that we have Ian Ziering coming on the show from 90210. He's got a new show coming out. We're really excited to talk to him. But first, Mike, what's the topic you wanted to talk about?
All right. We don't get political often.
And we watched the debates the other night, and people were laughing. That you're like, look at these two babbling idiots.
Like I said, it's like us. But what that whole watching the debates just made me think of, okay, you know, because every campaign runs on several messages, but usually there's one or two things that, like, this is what they're going to change. They're going to reduce taxes. They're going to care about the environment. They're going to whatever. And so my question, we have our good friend Catherine on too that's going to join us because she loves everything politics.
Which this topic scares me on so many levels because I feel like we can't have opposing we can't have different sides without conflict.
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, like, let's say you're a Republican and I'm a Democrat. Mm-hmm. I feel like we can't say that without getting crap or someone's upset or they're angry and they want to push and they're like, why would you, you know, vote for this person? That's stupid. Or why would you? And it's like,
well, that's the
we
whole
can't
issue.
Have our own
different opinions.
Yeah, we can't have our different opinions without just. And so, and but it stinks that you can't say who you want to vote for because you're going to get trampled if you do one way or the other. I mean, Catherine, she's also my, you know, our manager and, you know, day to day. And she's like, it's a suicide.
Yeah, you really can't do it right now, unfortunately. It's sad. It's very volatile right now, though. It's always been a taboo subject, and mm-hmm. it's always kind of been one of those, like, be careful if you touch it because you'll piss off half the country.
Mm-hmm.
But now, more than ever, it's like,
oh, not, yeah.
Like, don't touch it. But you get for not touching it. Excuse my language. That's yeah. the other yeah. thing.
You're right.
If you don't post stuff mm-hmm. for certain things, then you get crap from the other side. So it's really kind of a lose-lose.
I feel like at the end of the day, though, you know, and this is, I've never voted before, but Michael and I both registered to vote. And mm-hmm. I think the most important thing is no matter who you're voting for, just vote because your vote does matter. And I'm now so excited to vote. I've never been more excited in my life.
Let me ask you a question on that before I get on my topic.
Okay.
Because I've always been, this is the first year I'm voting because this is the most I paid attention to it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. In the past, I've chosen not to. Just out of my own personal interest, I wasn't interested. And then I always grew up in a house where, like, politics was when the family get-togethers got ugly. Because, like, parents and uncles and aunts started yelling and mm-hmm. talking over each other. And as a kid, I'm like, I don't want any part of this. So I just kind of stayed away from politics. So my question is, would you rather somebody vote just to vote? Or if they're uneducated, not throw their vote in the ring?
So, good question. Well, let me just say two things. What's interesting on my side growing up, I remember sitting at the dinner table with my mom and my dad, and it was elections, and I was like, who are you guys voting for? And they would not tell each other who they were voting for. So I've never known what side my mom or my dad was on. I've never known. Is that like in your family too?
Because we didn't talk about politics and religion. Like, you don't talk about politics and religion. That's what how we were brought up. Mm-hmm. Like, that's just like those subjects you stay away from.
So
not
that was
now. Oh, that was a thing for sure. Oh,
so
yeah.
It wasn't like
I still
this then.
Probably couldn't tell you 100% how my parents would vote. Either.
It's just yeah. It's just so interesting when you said that because I'm like I'd be like, Mom, are you voting for, you know, what was it,
Bush.
Bush or Al Gore or whoever it was? And, you know, oh, my dad loved Ross Perot because he used to always like impersonate Ross Perot.
<That's>
of course,
amazing.
Martin would.
Yeah.
But like that's as far as I knew, you know, besides my dad like doing impersonations. But so to go to your question, you know, I've seen a lot of things going around lately. And again, I don't want to get political because I think people don't like if we go political. But they say even the Democrats will say or they've said. And again, I'm not saying which side I'm on, but they have said that. Don't vote for the candidate, vote for the issues. So.
Well, which is why that's a principle that goes back.
Right.
You know, decades and hundreds of years, really, because that's why people identify as one or the other, because even if they don't like the candidate, you know, it's either the lesser two evils or even probably 4 years ago when Trump and Hillary, both of them seemed like terrible candidates. So both Democrats probably voted for Hillary and Republicans probably voted for Trump. But
so I think to answer your question, I think people, like if they have, you know, if they feel strongly about this way, they're going to vote Democrat regardless of the candidate. But if they don't know, that's
what I'm saying.
But I feel like they might know enough. But again, I don't know why I never did. Maybe I didn't feel like, I don't think I felt like my vote counted. I don't know, Kat, what do you think?
I think it's hard. I think I would rather, to answer your question, I think I would rather people vote Because I think it kind of takes away your ability to, and I there's been several years I haven't voted, but I kind of takes away your ability to bitch about everything. You know, I mean, it kind of like, if you didn't cast your vote, you kind of can't complain kind of thing. Sure. But the whole voting for the issue versus, I think a lot of times it's like when you're more in the middle, then you're kind of voting for candidate. But if you're a Democrat, you're voting Democrat. Right. If you're a Republican, you're voting Republican. Right. It doesn't matter whether you like the candidate or not.
And can we just be nice about it? Like, can we not just cast our own? I mean, but I guess that is why you don't talk about it. I don't know. But why can't we have a healthy debate? And honestly, I was so disappointed in that debate because I wanted to understand both sides. I truly was like sway me one way or the other, you know? But and I couldn't hear anything.
It was just, it was terrible debate, but it's entertaining television for the 30 minutes that we watched it. And we're like, we can't take this anymore.
Shut up, man.
Come on, man.
Just shut up, man.
I will say, when I've asked this question before, you know, people, like I remember my grandfather asking me years ago, why did you vote, Mike? So, well, I'm uneducated.
Is he left or right?
I couldn't tell you.
Because he was a Marine?
Marine.
Yeah. So I'm just curious.
I don't know. I'll have to ask him. But, you know, I'd say, well, I'm not uneducated, so I don't want to just vote just to vote. And he called me out a little bit. He was like, well, it's your kind of civil duty to be educated as a citizen of this country. I was like, touche. Fair enough. You know, so I still didn't vote after that. I didn't educate myself. Sorry, Gramps. But now I'm taking more of an interest to it. I think, too, having kids and finally growing up a little bit, I guess I'll start listening to politics. But back to my original topic question.
I will just say, though, to end that little thing, just vote. And I'm super excited. And I feel like such a hypocrite for saying that since I've never voted before, but I'm so excited. So register, vote, and be nice.
Everyone watch out for Jana's Instagram post. I voted.
I'm so excited. I've never been able to do that, to have the sticker and say, God, I voted.
Anyways, okay. So the topic is, if you were a presidential candidate, what would be your platform issue? Like, what would be that thing that you stand behind the most, that's like you're just driving home day after day?
So can I just have a squirrel moment for a second?
Sure.
This brings me back to middle school because I ran for president. And I was like, I remember the drawing. I remember the big poster board. And I was like, we're going to get a swimming pool in our cafeteria. And we all get free ice cream and pizza every day. I didn't win, sadly, because we couldn't get a swimming pool in the cafeteria. Hmm. But no, it reminds me of that. I have to think about that.
You want me to start with mine?
I do.
Okay. For me, just my personal interest and belief, would be, especially after the way 2020 went, would be all around schools. Mm. So, you know, finding funding for teacher salaries so we can get the best teachers, so we can get encourage more teachers to work somewhere, so, you know, schools can have the resources they need, from the schools in the suburbs to the inner city schools. Just, we can supply them with what they need with
time out.
Teachers.
While you're doing this right now, you have like the presidential, like you've got the thing. I don't even think you realize you're doing
Obama thumb. Mine's like the hand, the backhand to the palm.
I don't know if America's really going to trust. We're going to get this and we're going to get this.
We're going to get it done. So yeah, that would be my thing. It's just like security around schools because of school shooting stuff in the past would be having teachers, being able to pay them. So we encourage more young people to become teachers. So it's like a career that people, you know, there's a lot of teachers want to become teachers, but we encourage even more to become teachers because financially it's beneficial, and it should be. As we've all learned, we all have a greater appreciation for teachers after 2020. So mine would be based all around schools in our future.
I like that, since our kids are our future. Catherine, do you have a debate to that, or would you like to add your own?
I like that one. I would have said years ago, health insurance or health care. Mm. Not to go into like the whole thing, but I just don't feel like we've gotten there at all. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the answer is exactly, but something with healthcare. But now it would definitely be the sex trafficking.
Mm-hmm. Hands down.
Yep. Oh, good one.
The top now.
Yep.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Because both those do involve the kids, I'm going to have to I'm going to be in the middle here and I'm going to say both of those. Can I steal both of those?
That's no fun.
World peace.
Are you the independent party in this?
I am. I feel so independent anyways. No, I mean, but because those, I mean, sex trafficking, that's insanely like
problematic.
Yes. So, and obviously with schools too. I would honestly say, I will say this, if there was a way to clean up, like California, there was homeless people and needles and everywhere in Studio City. Mm-hmm. So if there's a way to somehow clean that up a little.
Yeah, some kind of program, which there may be. I don't
And there might be, but so let's put some more money into it, or to just help, or how we can help homeless people maybe get on their feet. Like I know in Nashville, we do the homeless paper. And so you don't see as many homeless people. I mean, it's growing a little bit more in Nashville right now, but just being able to not enable, but help them.
You know what sucks about that? That's one of those issues that no matter which way you swing it, you're going to get backlash because...
Why?
Because people are going to complain, number one, that there's a homeless problem, or that there's, you know, people in the valley, like where we live, they're like, oh, there's homeless everywhere. But then they're going to start doing these programs and they're going to be like, this is where our tax dollars are. They had their chance. They failed in society. Why are we going to spend our tax dollars and put these programs and do this housing for the homeless? And so that's what I'm saying. It's just one of those topics which unfortunately people are going to complain no matter which way.
So then instead, I mean, the underpass where we used to live in California, there's now, they gave them four bathrooms, and I mean there's just the entire mm-hmm. place is just like, and then across the street, I'm like, I don't want Jolie walking across the street into this, like it's I totally get your side, but there's got to be something.
No, I agree with you. I'm just saying that's what's gonna happen.
What if you offered them all jobs? Would they take them?
I bet you probably half wouldn't. It's like when we offered kind bars, they're like, oh, I can't eat that, and I'm like, what?
Yeah,
you're living on the street, you don't want I have a box of Kind bars.
Yeah, you didn't want them.
So I mean, to answer your question, I don't know.
That's the hard. Yeah. I don't know how you. Yeah,
those bars don't agree with my palate. I'm gonna pass.
I was just like, what?
Only in West Hollywood.
A good question, though.
What about Easton?
Yeah, Easton. What?
Easton, what would you do?
Marvel movies free for everyone.
You know, Jana, when you were saying, like, I ran for president too in junior high school, and I looked up what you actually have power to do as like a student body president, and it was like, and I told them, I'm like, I'll make the rallies more engaging. I'll try to keep them brief. There's not much more I can do other than that. And then my opponent's like, we're getting ice cream for lunch every day, and I'm canceling school on Fridays, and he won the election, and I was like, he can't do any of that stuff, and. It was actually a pretty good lesson in how politics work because that's who ended up winning. But if I were running for president in general, I mean, I would like to see some of our budget be directed maybe away from national defense and more towards we can get rid of those student loans that are making everybody crippled. We can beef up our healthcare a bit. There's a lot of problems we have in this country that could be fixed with a lot of money, and that money is available. So that's something I would like to try to influence. And of course, ice cream for everybody and cancel school on Fridays. That's what I would do.
Yeehaw.
Yeah.
I love it.
All right. That was a great topic. And again, let's all just, can we just be kind to each other?
Nah.
Let's take a break. And then Ian Ziering is going to join the show. I'm excited to talk to him.
Can't wait.
All 90210. You have the loudest swallow.
I'm sincerely
swallow. What are we talking about here?
I'm sincerely sorry.
Ian, my husband swallows so heavy into the microphone that I'm just like, it's just like he even tries to back away, but it's just.
She's at that point. I could drink water right now. She'd be like, I hate how you drink water.
Oh, no. I just like your swallow is just so loud.
It's like, yeah, you guys have been married for a long time.
Hi, Ian.
I know. So sorry to hear your swallow is irritating to you.
You and me both. We have to, a whole new thing of worms to open up with our therapist now.
I mean, seriously. I mean, how many do you get annoyed that with how many times people probably call you Ian?
You know, it's happening less and less as I get older. I'm changing the norm.
Like, everybody knows who you are, but it's like, can you, because I mean, people even will be like, they'll call me Jaina, and I'm like, it's Jana, but that's fine. Like, you can call me whatever you want.
Whatever you want.
That's fine.
Yeah. You know, I am what my mom named me, you know, and Jaina, you know, you are what your mom named you. So
exactly. And you're Ian.
It's not obnoxious just to ask to be called what you were named.
Right.
You know, people, oh, he's so stuck up. Well, listen, idiot, my name's not Ian. It's Ian. It's what my mom called me. My friends and family call me Ian. You can call me whatever you want. I've been called a lot worse than Ian. I don't care. I'll pass over it.
Right.
Take it up with mom if you have an issue.
Seriously.
Well, if you guys don't recognize that voice and you can't see his face like we can, fortunately, that's Mr. Ian Ziering, the one and only. So welcome to the show.
Yay.
Thanks.
Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, man.
Thanks for having me. It was so nice to get a glimpse into the
married life,
the dynamic between you two before I signed on.
It's what you're missing, you know? Like, you're like, oh, thank God, this is why I got divorced. like amazing.
Similar situation, different reasons, but you know what? Marriage is difficult,
so
you know.
Hard.
But at the end of the day, the work can be challenging, but it should feel like working in a garden. Not necessarily schlepping boxes up 50 flights of stairs. And at the end of the night, you can agree to disagree, but you know in your heart you got the right person if they're the one you want to wake up next to the next morning. So that's what it takes.
I mean, it's so true. And because you were married for how long? I mean, a long time, right?
About 9.5 years before we filed.
Yeah. And I just, I don't know. It's just, I mean, we always, obviously it's a relationship show. We talk a lot about our relationship, and marriage is just work. It's hard. Some days you're just like, ugh, like, would I just be happier alone? Would he be happier alone? And it's just difficult. And especially when you have kids mixed into it.
Yeah. How many kids do you guys have?
We have two.
Yeah.
And then how old are your kids?
Seven and nine. Aww. Second grade and fourth grade.
So
two little girls. They're just the best.
How are they?
Best thing ever.
How is co-parenting? How is that going with them?
It's, you know, it's, they don't know better. They don't know differently. Their entire world. There's not one thing that's been the same since we broke up very quickly. Erin moved out.
Wow.
And after that, school became virtual. They can't see their friends. Mm. So there's two homes that they're going back and like every foundational building block, every support system has been turned on its side. So they're incredibly resilient. You know, they roll with this a lot, honestly, a lot better than I do. I worry about my kids. They don't worry about anything. They want to go roller skating or whatever. They don't want to go on to Zoom, and they don't want to do any schoolwork, but that's the same for me. It's, you know, it's the struggle to make sure they're getting everything they need and then some. And that's where, because of this global pandemic, because of the social unrest, because of the fires, because of everything, the divorce, it just feels like there's really no way for me to win as dad. It's like the system right now is kind of stacked against me, and it's not for any fault of mine or my ex's. It's because of the situation that we all find ourselves in. But right now it just is a particularly heavily downpour of a storm.
Is there any piece of you that you're like, you know, obviously you didn't foresee any of this happening, you know,
no,
before you filed, but is there any part of you that was like, man, I wish I stuck it out or did more, even though you probably did so much work, but so that this,
yeah.
I mean, is there any regret with that at all? Or,
you know, cratering your family is not an easy thing to do. It takes a lot of courage. Mm-hmm. I we tried to make this work as long as possible, and it got to the point where, you know, nothing was changing. You got to have matched energy in mm-hmm. pursuing a happy marriage, and there just wasn't that. And, you know, Erin is an amazing mom. Mm-hmm. She's so good to my girls. You know, I've got a lot to be thankful for. I'll always love her. She gave me the kids. And, you know, we talk. We're civil. It's, you know, disappointment's going to be stinging for a while. But life has to go on. I want to show my kids what a loving relationship is. And there just was not enough of that. You know, I want my kids to see, to not see disrespect. Mm. I want them to see functioning, mm-hmm. Relationship. And I know that, you know, with the right person, myself and Erin will be able to show that. We just didn't have, mm-hmm. What it takes, and life doesn't give you a dress rehearsal. So,
what's one thing that you'll take into your next relationship that you learned from your past that you can do better, and you can look in the mirror and be like, okay, I can own this and I can do better when this conflict arises?
You know, it's interesting because when we got married as an actor, you know, there's no job security. Mm-hmm. And a husband and father is a no fail endeavor to me. So I started a business. I got involved with a network marketing company to build a business. I've been an employee my whole life, and it still hasn't created the kind of wealth that would allow me to dictate how I want to spend my time. Only business owners create that kind of wealth. And I started a business, and in building that business, you know, it involved me being away, you know, a little bit. The woman who was mentoring me was on the East Coast, and it necessitated me flying to the East Coast for five. I would leave Sunday night red eye out of LAX, and I would fly to land at 6 a.m. at JFK, where I'd get in a rental car and I would drive to Connecticut, and over the till I would leave Saturday morning the next week on a 7 a.m. flight, because I wanted to maximize my time there and minimize my time away. So I would take a red eye Sunday night, but I would get back as early as I could on Saturday, having the whole week to drive 500-600 miles to different people's homes, explaining about the products and trying to build consumers and other business builders. And, you know, it took its toll on me. And, you know, I got a lot of blowback for that during that time, because, you know, Erin didn't appreciate me being away. And I understand that. She thought I was there selling soap. Why am I going to women's homes? I mean, I got to think there's a little bit of what's going on there. But I was building a business. And when you build a business, there's no elevator to success. You got to take the stairs. And I had faith that I could do this. I burned my boats. I committed. I was going to make this happen. Other people do it. I can do this. Mm. And if I could use the celebrity leverage, then it's going to happen a little quicker. And, you know, it took a few years, but it took its toll. And I wasn't as present as I could have been. And when I'd get home from traveling, I was a freaking zombie. Mm-hmm. And Erin having nothing but babies to talk to, like, so you just lay there, I'm going to talk. And I felt so bad. But, you know, you got to be present, but you got to find a way to juggle. And while I was doing everything I could to provide for my family, while I didn't have money in the bank, I mean, there was no Sharknado at that time, 90210, that money comes and goes. Yeah. This was a way to provide. And then working on Sharknados would take me out of the country, or working with the Chippendales. I was away 2 summers, but they came to visit me. It's just, you know, It just takes its time. I think that the lesson to be learned is to be able to juggle your time so you can always be present for your spouse, but yet have enough individuality to do what you need to be a provider. I think ultimately I got punished for doing what I felt I had to do to provide for the family. And now, you know, 11 years later, I'm at the top tier of this company, where now they're looking to me to talk to the corporation, to talk to other countries and how I built my business. So I made it to that level of success, but it had a price. I'm not saying that that's what cost me my marriage. There are other variables, sure. But you know, you asked me what I would do differently. What I'm taking out of this and finding, 2.0, it's that you just got to find a way to always be present and pick up the cues that your spouse or loved one gives you. Because when you don't, you know, you put yourself in a position where you become disposable to your spouse. Mm-hmm. You never want to go to sleep wondering if the person you're lying next to loves you. Mm. It's the worst.
Mm-hmm. That's such a tough.
Thanks for sharing that.
Thanks
by the way,
for sharing that.
I appreciate
it. That was amazing and definitely captivating. And it's so hard, that balance, because all your intentions are pure. People's intentions are pure, like you said, like when they want to provide or be successful. And, you know, it's so much easier in hindsight, which I'm sure it's easier for you in hindsight now, having made, you know, turned this business into a success and being in the position you are now, to even look back and probably been like, oh, maybe I could have been more present. You know, I'll think that way about things I've done. It's like, you know, in my playing days, oh, maybe I could have worked a little harder. But in that moment, if I take myself back 10 years, I'm like, no, I was working my ass off. And you might have been
my ass off.
Yeah, you might be doing the same thing. It's like, maybe I could have been more present. And again, hindsight, but maybe at that time, you were doing the best that you could at juggling everything, you know? And it's such an unfortunate.
There's no playbook. There's no instruction manual, you know? But it takes tolerance by your spouse. It takes understanding and acceptance. And again, you know, I'm not saying this was the only reason that mm-hmm. we had broken up. There were some other significant flaws in our ability to communicate. But again, you asked me what did I learn? Mm-hmm. I think the most important thing I've learned was to always try to cater to the needs of my spouse. You know, I never felt like I was not doing that, but I think I could have done it better. Or if I had more of an understanding of what was happening because of what I was doing, mm-hmm. you know, I'm a very driven person. My father taught me a work ethic that, you know, is relentless. Mm-hmm. And when you're building a business, you have to burn your boats, especially if you're in a financial vehicle that you know is a Ferrari and it takes you to step on the gas. Mm-hmm. Once you do that, you're going to have the forward motion, but again, you got to take the stairs. And hopefully your partner, in knowing what you're doing, will appreciate what you're doing. And Aaron did, although it continued to be challenging.
Right.
You know, I'd come home, like I said, I'd be a zombie after like driving 500 or 600 miles in 5 days and taking red eyes out and, you know, taking a 7 a.m. flight out of JFK, waking up at 4 a.m. on a Saturday morning in Connecticut to get to JFK to return my rental car, to get on a plane, to get home. It's just like,
what the silver lining, though, I mean, besides your business becoming successful, is I know your girls were probably too young to obviously experience this in the moment and really witness what you were doing. But what a gift that you can give them, being able to instill that same relentlessness and work ethic that your father instilled in you, to be able to share your adventure through building this business with your daughters when they're of age and seeing what it takes and being like, man, my dad was able to do this and this is how he did it. Yeah, it comes with sacrifices, but that's just something that I feel like work ethic is something our kids only see or only kind of receive by seeing. You know what I mean? Yeah. I don't think it's something that they just wake up one day and, oh yeah, I'll work hard. It's they see it from us. So the fact that you have that and that story to tell them is just, I mean, that's a gift in my opinion.
Yeah. It's, comes with tax, but yeah, it's a good gift. Want my girls to be smart, independent thinkers, and successful in their own right with whatever it is that they want to do. And having a good, strong work ethic is important. But I think that what's important to know is that they shouldn't work hard for a living. Mm-hmm. They should work hard for a lifestyle.
That's good.
If it's a lifestyle that incorporates, that includes a spouse or a loved one, you got to find a way to make all the layers synchronous. They all have to work together. I think that's what maybe was missing from my build out, but I'll be sure to instill that in the kids.
I love that. And you know, you have this successful business, but you know, you're also acting. You have a show coming out on CW, right?
Yeah. Oh my God. That's
exciting. So you still love to act then? I mean, I know we saw Sharknado, loved it. I mean, I obviously 90210, I mean, hello, like obsessed.
Yeah. But,
this is so exciting.
Swamp Thing was originally, we finished shooting that in April of 2019.
Okay.
And it aired originally on the DC Universe. It was a streaming app. Mm-hmm. Oh. But nobody saw it. They just didn't have a lot of eyes on it. The DC Universe still exists. But this kind of quality content cost hundreds of millions of dollars. So they weren't getting the return on their investment because the eyeballs in that universe were small. Mm-hmm. Now that it's moving to CW network, there's going to be millions of eyeballs on this thing.
Oh yeah.
And it's so worthy of this attention because this is industry disruptive programming. When was the last time you saw a TV show or a horror movie or whatever that was, yes, they're scary, they might be frightening, but spooky? Like, spooky is delicious. Spooky smolders. Spooky, like, is what makes your skin, like, look, I got goosebumps right now.
He has goosebumps.
The Swamp Thing is spooky. It's delivered in a way that when you put the best writers in Hollywood together with top tier producers and some of the best directors and the cutting edge visual effects special effects production company together, and you hire a cast, like I'm working with just unbelievable actors. Jennifer Beals, Kevin Durand, Will Patton, Maria Sten, Henderson Wade.
Did they call you and you're like, hey, we've got this part for you? Or did you?
No. What happened was my agent calls and says, hey, you have an audition for a DC superhero. And I was like, what? Because inside of all this, I'm still an 8-year-old boy. I mean, most women will agree to that. Oh, he's just a child inside. But yeah, we are. And this catered to that. This brought back all the excitement that I remember in reading the Swamp Thing comic books and seeing Adrian Barbeau and Heather Locklear clown the whole property way back in those ridiculous movies. More fun. But I have an audition for, first of all, DC comic, a superhero to play the Blue Devil. Really? Yeah. And it's at, 9 o'clock tomorrow morning. Here's the script. Good luck.
Don't you love that? One day to prepare. I'm like, oh.
Called up a friend, another actor, came over, helped me workshop it. We tore it up, tried it different ways, got it on its feet, got it to the point where I owned it. Where all the words were inside that I could start making it my own. Mm-hmm. Went in the next day and it wasn't a typical audition where you stand in front of a camera and the casting director says, slate your name. No, this was in a small theater on the Warner Brothers lot.
Wow.
And the producers were there. The writers were there.
Oh, wow.
People from Warner, like this was the room. And
you were testing. You were testing.
It was basically a screen test.
Yeah.
And I didn't expect that, but I've been doing this long enough that I'm not going to let that slow me down. I don't get nervous. I get excited. They manifest themselves in the same physiology. Mm-hmm. And understanding that, I'm able to separate it. I'm like, I'm all right being excited, even though my mouth is dry and I got all this going on. When you're nervous, it's the same thing. But when you think about what's really happening inside of me, I was more excited. So it kind of takes the fear. Gets rid of the jitters. You can be excited about something and still have the cotton mouth going in. But I tore it up. I did the best I could. I drive home from my audition, and typically after an audition as an actor, so much rejection. You can't be the guy every time, but you can control. You can be in charge of what you present, and that's what I always strive for, perfection in my presentation. And I accomplished that. But driving home from this audition, I couldn't let it go. This was so special. The 8-year-old boy and son kept knocking on my head. Dude, if you get this, oh my God, you're going to be a superhero. Blah, 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 blah. Like, oh, shut up. Get out of my head. I don't want to think about this anymore. Because there's a very high degree of failure as an actor. Failure to get the role. Can't be the guy every time. I don't take it personally. I do the best I can. If I'm too tall, too short, wrong color, need a you know, whatever. You don't always fit. I'm okay with that. But I'm not okay if I blow the audition.
Yeah.
Then it's on me. Mm-hmm. I didn't blow the audition, did the best I could. That night, no call. Yeah. Next morning, they called me. My agent called me and said, hey, you got the part. And I was like, okay, all right, hold on a second. No callback? Because for a project where they're spending hundreds of millions of dollars, kind of would think they'd want a call back just to cross the T's and dot the I's, make sure that this is the guy. Like, no, you got it. I said, Glenn, do me a favor. Call him back and make sure it's Ian Ziering that they're booking. They may have seen Summerholder.
Yeah, Ian Summerholder.
So I said, I'm not doing it. I said, you're doing it because I'm just having a little trouble thinking that without a callback, I'm the guy. So he did. Not to confirm. I just need to confirm that it's my client. It wasn't like that. He was more sly in getting the confirmation. And I booked it. Wow. And then I started reading the scripts. And I tell you, the scripts were so powerful. With this kind of programming, typically it's run, 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 huge action piece. Mm-hmm. Run, 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 huge set piece. Run, 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 explosion. There's not enough time for quality development of the characters. Very superficial. You don't get an understanding of any kind of pre-life. You don't get an understanding of relationships. They use some of the best writers in Hollywood to deliver some of the most poignant, well-crafted scripts I've ever read, whether it's romantic comedy or science fiction or horror or whatever. There's so many layers inside of all of these scripts that really help you just get immersed in the characters. You're already starting to feel, you get the backstory delivered in a way that you're not even understanding that you're getting backstory, but it's happening and you're absorbing. You suddenly know, oh, Abby Arcane used to come from this town, and Alec Holland, boy, why doesn't he wear like shoes in the swamp? Why is he wearing flip-flops in the swamp? Dude, what's gonna get me? Like, you just start sending your mind in these different ways. When you couple that with directors that, Len Wiseman, oh my God, Underworld. You see all those and a ton of other movies that like
my husband is like the Marvel DC, just like he's
I'm
like
all about
right.
He's
I'm
rewatching
sold.
So you know, them now.
I'm yeah. sold.
So you know, Michael, you know that it's like these dudes deliver. James Wan, the guy that directed Aquaman, produced this. His company produced this. So he brought that level of quality content to Swamp Thing. All these variables are falling into place, and I'm realizing that I'm working at the top of the food chain here. Mm-hmm. I've got actors. Jennifer Beal. Will Patton. You know Will Patton? You might not know the name. You know this guy's face, and he is amazeballs.
I mean, you're talking us into it. I mean, you don't even have to because he's like, but as a.
Oh, no. Oh, no. You got to sample. I'm telling you, sample this. You're going to want to.
Well, and it's coming out this Tuesday.
October 6th, Swamp Thing on CW. Check it out, guys. Ian, thank you so much. We're sold. I hope our viewers are too. This is going to be amazing.
Listen. Thanks so much. Thanks for having me on, guys. Nice chatting with you. All the best.
Hey, thanks for just being vulnerable as well and sharing your story. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, buddy.
Okay. Appreciate it.
All right, bye, Ian.
Bye-bye.
Bye. I love his passion, and I think the silver lining in all of that is, you know, especially with how things went down with his relationship and what he could maybe go back. I think it's just a good reminder to all of us who are maybe, yes, it's still important to work and work really hard, but you also need to work on the relationship that your family is in, and just to remember that that is there and that it still needs nourishing in, you know, and but that's it's a hard balance, especially when you're, you know, trying to run a business or do this or go back to school or you know. But I think it's just still important to, as someone who, you know, potentially not regrets, but would, if he could go back, that would be the thing. And I think that's something that I've, you know, we've obviously heard before a lot too, from other people who have, you know, are very successful, but they miss the time with their family. And I think it's just learn balance, you know, to learn balance a little better.
It all comes with a price and just living in moderation. But I love his excitement about the project he's doing. That gets me excited. I love the vulnerability he had with opening up, you know, around his girls and his, you know, marriage situation. So don't forget to check out that show, Swamp Thing, October 6th on the CW.
And we love you guys. We'll so excited again. Unwind with us October 5th. Tickets are at TIXR.com. See you next week.
Later.